The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
Daniela Velasquez has gotten a crash course in the realities and opportunities of St. Louis politics. She was recently elected as the alderwoman for the 6th Ward and has joined a shrunken board of aldermen that is dealing with a raft of challenges. Velasquez joins us for the latest episode of Politically Speaking to talk about the board's big priorities and some hypothetical ideas to spend a settlement emanating from the departure of the St. Louis Rams. Let's hit the music.
This is Politically Speaking, the definitive show about politics in the St. Louis region.
I thought this was an opportunity to have a new voice in that seat.
And the decisions I make in county government allows me to help people in large groups, and I enjoy it.
We're not using it as a wedge issue. We're using it more as a, you know, what's right for the region conversation.
We need to know what the issues are in our communities in order to address them.
Because people want to see change, and they want to see a St. Louis that works for everyone.
Some days I need the credit, most days I don't. But most importantly, I have to be able to control how this environment is going to evolve.
We knew that in races that have multiple candidates, the only way you win is in the streets.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining me in studio, she covers all things city government, justice, everything
whatever they
else.
Tell me to do, Rachel Lippman.
And joining us for the first time, she is the alderwoman for St. Louis's 6th Ward.
Daniela Velasquez.
It is wonderful to have two Missouri Tiger Journalism School graduates to outnumber the Northwestern journalism graduate in this room, by the way.
I totally agree.
Whatever.
My wife would not agree, obviously, since she also went to Northwestern. But we're not here to talk about J School, though we may talk about that a little bit because it is part of your background. But before we ask you about who you are and how you got into this world of St. Louis politics, just to remind our listeners what the 6th Ward encompasses.
Right. So, well, thank you for having me here. The 6th Ward is the neighborhoods of Shaw, Tower Grove South, Compton Heights, and a little bit of Dutchtown. So South City, but not too far south.
So, kind of in and around Tower Grove Park, parts of Tower Grove Park, what I like to refer to as the Park Wards.
That is our big park in the ward.
Yes.
Do you have the botanical garden?
I do not.
Oh.
I will have the 6th Ward, I think, will also have the most dog parks in the city when it's all said and done. So we have one in Shaw. There's one. There is a not often used, maybe after this airs, one in Compton Hill.
I was going to say, do you want to spoil that for the dogs that do go there?
Well, not many do, I hear.
Well, now that they know about it,
That they know about it. So Compton Hill, don't be mad at me.
All the canines that listen to the show now know that. But tell us a little bit about yourself and what were you doing before you decided to run for alderwoman earlier this year?
Sure. So I my background is, as Jason mentioned, journalism and communications. And before that, I was a vice president of Fleischman Hillard, doing public relations and a lot of DE&I work. Been a journalist, been a communications advocate, and learning that communication skills are a good thing to have in local politics.
What made you decide to go from being on the side of speaking for someone else to being the actual elected official, able to, you know, speak for yourself in the political realm?
Sure. Well, one of the fun facts, Rachel and I did a lot of work together on the other side when I was a director of communications at the ACLU of Missouri.
It's a very, very busy stretch for the ACLU at that
very
point.
Very busy stretch, right? Right before President Trump was elected. But that's a whole other, politically speaking, I'm sure. No, I decided to run, one, because I am the first Latina ever elected in the city of St. Louis. And one thing over the years is trying to see, you know, make sure that people are represented, and we had never had anybody from our community be elected in the city. So when there was an opportunity to run, I, you know, decided, you know, let's do it, you know, because if not now, then when? And if not me, then who? That was the short calculus.
Why does that distinction matter to you as the first Latina to be represented? There have been men of Latino descent on the board, but as you mentioned, you're the first Hispanic woman to run and win.
Well, Latinos are on the rise. I mean, I think they're the fastest growing small business owners. There's a lot of movement, but also it's a distinction because it's, you know, I come from news. We want to be accurate, you know, and so Latina being the female, you know, version of Latino, but also just, you know, wanting to make sure we get it right.
So you ran against former alderwoman and former recorder of deeds.
Jason's favorite local office.
My favorite local office, Jennifer Florida. You won by over a little over 1,000 votes.
And it was not close.
It was not a close race. What was it kind of like to run against somebody who had run many, many times before when this was like your first race yourself?
Well, I think in this case, fear might not be a good way to lead, but I think fear is a good way to run for an election. You know, I wanted to make sure that I was doing everything that I could to run a good campaign and to win. And so no matter, even though my opponent had more experience and I did not, I wanted to just do everything I could.
You've been on the board now since April of 2023. What's been your first impressions of City Hall?
Well, I will tell you that I believe that election years are like dog years. So even though it's been like 8 months, I don't know, it feels like 3 or 4 years.
I once had someone ask me how many election nights I had worked over my career, and I have one every single year as the local politics reporter. But so I get your point.
Yeah. It's been, you know, every day is an adventure in Aldering. It is busy and more complex than I think, you know, I realized at the time. I mean, I think what is, you know, coming from both an advocacy background and a corporate background, you know, things do tend to move at a different pace in government. And I think especially when it comes to legislation, and that is where it's really important, because even though you think you can think things through, you can never think things through by yourself, right? So the legislative process, the figuring out those pieces take more time. You know, I think we're also in a time of transformation at the city. I think, you know, there's a group of us, and I can obviously only speak for myself, that really want to transform the way government works for people. I think that we do have complex social issues to address, and we've got some basic things like city services to address. And so figuring out how to make them more efficient and then working in a system that, you know, needs some upgrades, I think has been a little bit eye-opening. We're staff for the first time. I've got a great legislative aide. I split an executive secretary between me and Alderman Narayan. We have team meetings. We're trying to be as in sync as we can. You know, but it's a lot of setting up processes and then figuring out how things work so we can figure out how to make them better.
Do you think that you've been able to strike as a board the right balance between addressing those, get the city services operating, and then the larger, broad policy systemic processes that need to be changed for the city to work for everyone?
I think it's a yes and. I think, I mean, like legislation, I mean, it's a process that's always being tweaked. So, you know, I'm really proud of the fact that we passed the water rate increase, not to raise rates, because it's not the politically.
Nobody really likes paying more for stuff, but continue.
Right, exactly. However, it was something that, I mean, it was well beyond a decade overdue, and that's really for the long-term health of our city. And frankly, there's probably some more that we need to do there. I think that short-term rentals was a bill that took time it's been in the birthing process for like 5 years before it got signed.
It's the gestation of an elephant.
Yes. Well said.
Is that true?
No, elephants do not have a gestation period of 5 years, but it is like 2 years.
I was like, jeez.
I was just imagining. I was like, that sounds really big and it would take a long time and be complicated and maybe a little painful.
Exactly.
Sounds like legislation.
Yes.
Sounds like the legislative process. So I think that those are things that, like, striking that balance. I mean, I think that we've what you're, I think, going to see with the reallocation of ARPA funds are things looking at city services. I know that there's been some robust conversation, A, about the reallocation, but B, you know, what can we do for the water department? I've been talking to the president's office and Alderwoman Schweitzer about, what can we do to have more evidence, more data about roads so we can make good decisions. So I'd like to see some more of that. So I think we've still got a ways to go, but I think that we are doing some things that are striking that balance.
We have seen some dissension, though, even among so-called allies on the board. Like, we saw that with this legislation involving the unhoused community. Just more generally, like, is the Board of Aldermen's, like, ruling faction as united as it seems, or is it really an issue-by-issue situation? Are factions just, like, imaginary and they don't really even exist, basically?
And also, too, I mean, is it united as maybe those in the media would like for the narrative purposes?
And so what this says, like, I don't know if we're looking for factions. I feel like people are looking for factions, you know, among us. I don't think we're 14 people. I mean, you get any 14 people in a room to talk about this stuff and you won't have agreements. You know, I think that at least what I've seen so far, I think people are, for the most part, committed to listening to each other, committed to learning, committed to kind of taking a broader approach, which I think has been different in the past, that, you know, yes, I may not have had as many water main bursts in the Sixth Ward as other places, but I still think it's important that we did this rate increase for the health of, you know, the infrastructure. And that's just one example. So I think, you know, not everybody's going to agree on everything, as you well know and have seen. But I think and I continue to hope that there's commitment to at least being collegial and listening to each other and trying to work some of these things out.
Is that there? Is most of the disagreement that you're seeing actually in good faith on policy? Or does it occasionally tip into the being disagreeable and disagreeing just for that sake?
Well, I think there's some examples that I could point to that have happened both ways. I think for the most part on the big things, people are committed to listening and working it out in good faith. You know, obviously there have been some contentious resolutions in the past few weeks or so that, you know, might have been some disagreeing to disagree because we don't actually have any say on foreign policy.
It would be interesting if the Board of Aldermen could solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
It'd be like an automatic Nobel Peace Prize, I think, for the St. Louis Board of Aldermen if
which
you
is,
solve.
I just wanted to be. I wanted
conflict.
To unveil the curtain about what she was talking about.
Yeah.
Continue,
Rachel. On that ground, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the legislation that you've got coming up. I mean, is it truly the responsibility and the role of the Board of Aldermen to be taking kind of a stand symbolically on some of these issues, or should you just kind of stay in your lane when you have, like you said, no impact on foreign policy?
I think, you know, obviously my colleagues might think differently. I mean, I think, you know, we have a responsibility to, we've got plenty of things to work on in St. Louis, plenty of things to work on in the St. Louis region, you know, and that's what I'm choosing to focus on.
So we've seen some notable disagreements between the board and I think the mayor's administration, particularly when it comes to the corrections department. There were a number of aldermen who called for the resignation of Corrections Commissioner Jennifer Clemens Abdullah. I don't know if you were one of those people, but I think that you had been critical of what's happening at the jail. And there's been... Do you think that this is a sign that there is some frayed relationship between the aldermen and the mayor? Or is this just an example of, like, the legislature's doing its oversight of the executive and stuff like this is just going to happen regardless of whether the personal relationships are between yourself and the mayor are solid?
It's a great question. I mean, I do think that obviously there's been disagreements between the branches of government. I think that the CJC is a really tough situation all around, right? I mean, I did not ask for her resignation, but I was signed on to a letter over the summer just about the deplorable, you know, the conditions, because I know it's complicated, you know, but we should not have people dying and the numbers that people have died in the CJC. And we know that they're understaffed, and we know that there are, you know, they have a complex intake process with the people who come in there. you know, as a former reporter, it's one of those things where, you know, trying to understand what all is the truth. You know, I would like to say everything has been transparent all the way through. And, you know, it has not been. I've had a lot of questions. And we asked a lot. I asked a lot of questions during committee. And so, I mean, I think that there are some things that still that we have to continue to work, I think, more openly and collaboratively on between, you know, the branches of government. And I think that there are, you know, there are different approaches. I think that we as an alder, I mean, my, you know, I feel like my role is not to necessarily take a side, but to work, you know, with whatever leadership and whatever branch that is, you know, to create the best outcome for the people. And frankly, I think, you know, we do better as a city when we all work together. And certainly the people have more faith in us when they see a government that is working together and not squabbling, which is much easier for me to say here than for it to actually happen in real life.
Have you seen things from your perch on the Public Safety Committee improve at all? Or from information that you're getting in, have things actually changed there? Or is that something that you still think needs to happen, even if it isn't to all the way up at the head of the corrections needs to resign?
I mean, I think we'll see. I think time will tell. I mean, we passed the DFOB bill last week, I believe, recently. The mayor.
Something like that. Yeah, I think it was last week and they're waiting on signature. They made some changes. I lost track of that
and it,
one.
And it was almost unanimous. I think maybe it was like 12 to, you know, we'd have to look. But it was by far a majority of the board. And I think that we'll see. I mean, my hope is that with these new changes that the DFOB can do its job and that there's not a whole new set of things that aren't working right in a year. But I think that that's part of it. I also think that, you know, being a corrections officer in the city is a really tough job.
Oh, that was going to be my next question. Because when we had Alderman Rasheen Aldridge on the show, we asked about, like, what the starting salary for a corrections officer was. And I don't remember what he said, but
It was low.
It was low
for the work that they do.
It was ridiculously low for the dangerous job that they have. And I guess my question for you is, what is the Board of Aldermen doing to make sure that not only there can be like raises that help the current people there, but you can have a sustainable salary level that is going to recruit and retain people in the long run?
I mean, that's a citywide problem, right? I mean, I would even venture to say that's a Missouri-wide problem of just being a state that has low salaries, a state government that pays low salaries, a city government that pays lower salaries. I don't know Kansas City's numbers off the top of my head. But I think when everything from corrections officers to refuse drivers to, you know, police officers, I mean, there's not one department that I think that doesn't need a pay raise to be competitive. So I would say, you know, what was interesting about being newly elected in this process is that the budgeting process basically has already begun before you get elected.
Yeah, there's not a lot of ramp for newly elected alder people.
Not a lot at all. And, you know, hopefully that changes with the next elections because I think it's really difficult, but we're here. But also that budgeting process essentially had already begun by the time we were elected. So, and as the board has limited capacity to really alter and change that budget. But I certainly think that, you know, the better we can pay people, the more we can be competitive with everything, in every industry, with, you know, with the county, with all these munis and like with private organizations. And certainly you're seeing that, you know, kind of mix of like this workforce shortage and low pay, you know, this is kind of like
I would not be a corrections officer for $40,000 a year in the city of St. Louis.
I'm not sure you could pay me enough to be a corrections officer, period. But like, Jason's point is certainly very well taken. In the interest of journalistic accuracy, the Detention Facilities Oversight Board bill we were talking about was perfected. So first round approval locks in the language last week.
So we still have to vote on it.
Yes. There's still final passage
this
week. You are sponsoring a piece of a package of legislation that is aiming at putting some gun regulations in the city of St. Louis, and you've got the bill for defacing firearms. What is the motivation behind this legislation that you want to introduce, and what would it do?
So defacing a firearm is a fancy legal way of saying sawing off a serial number. And chances are if you're sawing off a serial number, you're probably not up to good things or non-criminal activity. So, you know, this is part of a slate of bills, you know, that a few alders filed and, with impetus from the mayor's office, I think, to draw attention to the fact that, you know, we have a gun violence problem in the city. And, you know, frankly, we as local legislators can't regulate these issues as we should. And, you know, the state legislators are really out of touch with the urban areas and suburban areas. I mean, there's been polling. There's, you know, people want more gun, common sense gun regulation. And obviously, you know, CVPA is not in my ward, but that it's right across the lines, you know, right across Kings Highway. But certainly that was, I think, you know, the example of our city that you can do everything right. And, you know, our state laws are failing us. So, you know, I think it is, you know, a statement, of course, that we want to be within the bounds of the Constitution. But I think that, you know, we need to have more regulation full stop when it comes to guns.
How likely is it, do you think, that with the state's very broad preemption language, any of these laws would survive a legal challenge? And then the follow-up question is, with that being said, is it then, again, the place of the alderman to do something like this when they're mostly symbolic because of that state preemption?
I mean, great question. I mean, I think it is, to some extent, our role when it's something that is, you know, every day happening in our city, gun violence. And it is so clear that people want more regulation. And part of, you know, getting shot or getting the state calling the city out for its level of violence is that also the state is saying, hey, you can actually fix it.
Is it already illegal, though, to saw off a serial number? Is there already a state law against
it? There's a federal.
Okay.
There's a federal law.
Okay. So if this, let's just say if your bill passes and it is not declared null and void, what would be the penalties for somebody who gets caught doing this?
It would increase the fine that they would have.
Mm-hmm. But is there any incarceration attached to it? Because I don't know if the city of St. Louis can, like, pass ordinances that lead to incarceration, right?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I with that ordinance, no. I think the way it's written increases the fine. So, I mean, it's not, you know, again, I mean, it's not anything that I think would stop the amount of violence. But I think it's this part of, you know, if we're going to do something, and I think there's been conversations on the state level of, like, is this, you know, and it's not my role as an older person, but as a concerned citizen, somebody concerned about gun violence, you know, will this be something that ends up on a statewide ballot, you know, in the next few years, which, of course, I think that there's talk about.
Yeah, it would seem, like, the biggest deterrent would be the federal prison sentence.
Right, if there's already the federal law, which, by nature of being the federal law, has, you know, stricter penalties behind it, what is the need for the city-level ordinance that would just lead to a fine? Isn't the deterrent more likely to happen at the federal level?
Well, I think there's also this, you know, part of this is this growing frustration, or this, I shouldn't say it's growing, this frustration with people, with constituents, right? That they want to see that we're taking action. And, you know, legally, we don't obviously want to do illegal things, but, like, we want to be able to, you know, let people know that we are serious about curbing, you know, violence. So is our ordinance, you know, right. I mean, is it going to be more of a deterrent than federal prison? I mean, it wouldn't be for me, probably not for somebody else. But I think, you know, it's part of this larger message that we want to send both to the people, you know, and to the state government that we, you know, that we need to address gun violence in a serious way.
If it isn't a deterrent, is it mostly just doing something to do something, though? Like, is that, again, is that sort of what the alderman should be doing? Like, you're saying we are doing something on gun violence, but are you actually doing something on gun violence with the federal penalty out there?
Well, I think it's a mix of things, right? I mean, I think that you'll see, like, the things that we're doing for gun violence as a city, I mean, or even public safety in general is, you know, the police officers had the biggest raise, you know, in the past, in a long time, last year. Certainly, you know, as an alder, building relationships with the police department, I've a great relationship with the chief and the commanders in our area. And so there are different, you know, I mean, it's all part of a mix of things to address it.
We'll be right back after this quick break with Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez. And we're back on Politically Speaking with 6th Ward Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez. I want to talk about the Rams money because that seems to be top of mind of a lot of ordinary citizens right now. Do you have any like general ideas about how you would want to spend the money emanating from the legal settlement over the departure of the St. Louis Rams?
So I actually think we should hold off on spending it, at least for a while. I do think that waiting till we've spent all our ARPA money is the most logical, practical thing to do, and let it accrue the 12 some odd million dollars a year it's accruing in interest. Because, you know, whether we want to do something transformational or infrastructure-wise or not, if we're in the process of allocating and reallocating ARPA money now and we can't quite figure out where everything is, that's going to be hard to do to spend the Rams money and be spending the ARPA money at the same time.
Right. How do you think the process for gathering public input has been going so far?
I think that there has been a lot of public engagement. I think, you know, the responses that I've seen, again, the 6th Ward had the highest number of return surveys for the Rams money.
Not surprising the old wards that made up the new 6th Ward were generally among the highest voter turnout, most civically engaged, et cetera.
Yes, and they have continued that trend.
There you go.
You know, so a lot of people, I think they want, what we've heard is, you know, sort of these practical things like city services and infrastructure. And, you know, there has been talk about some broader, more transformative, perhaps generational things like early childhood education. And certainly the response, I think, has been a mix of we want city services. So trying to balance that.
So I did my own public engagement a few weeks ago by making an Instagram video where I pretended to get a $250 million check from Stan Kroenke as a way to solicit answers to the question, what you want to do with the Rams money. So
did this involve you in the rocking plane? Was that this?
Yes, one? That okay. Was the rocking plane. It was not me cloning myself three times, which I did recently. And I want to like read some of these responses with the understanding that, you know, you don't want to spend this money right away, but, you know, you may want to spend this eventually. And I think some of these ideas are really worth discussing a little bit further. So Lori White wrote, give all the money to public schools and create a fund, an endowment, and a private foundation to raise money until St. Louis City Schools have as much funding as Clayton's, and then keep going. Out of all the responses, this one was the most repetitive one that I got. A lot of people want to see the Rams money go to help St. Louis public schools. What do you think of that overall conceptual idea?
Well, I like the idea of an endowment. And that's something that I've been, you know, I would have suggested on the portal myself is, you know, some kind of fund that accrues money that helps us, that we could make it, you know, last longer. You know, I mean, I think the schools are in an interesting position right now in the city. I recently read a public radio story that you all had with Ness Sandoval and, you know, the number of children leaving the schools. And it will affect, you know, funding. So, I mean, I think it's something that we can look into, but certainly I really do like the idea of giving us a cushion, like an endowment, for us to use in a different way that we can think about now.
There'd have to be legal questions about that, though, wouldn't there? Because the money went to the city of St. Louis, not the St. Louis Public Schools, and you guys are a separate entity. The schools are setting their own budget, they're setting their own tax rates, etc. The board does not manage anything having to do with the schools administratively.
Sure, and I should be clear. I think a general endowment fund, I would have to look into putting it toward the schools just because there's a lot of things happening with the school district right now. But certainly I think an endowment makes sense for us to make some money and give us some time to figure out how we want to use it the most effectively.
Al Bergomi wrote, financing the gutted child care education programs to train teachers to become leaders in the communities. Now, for full disclosure, I've sent my 3 children to a St. Louis City child care center for the last 9 years, and they are definitely having staffing problems, and the hours have actually been cut from you could pick them up at 6:30 to you have to pick them up at 5:30. So this is a real problem that is affecting a lot of people. And that doesn't even get into the whole issue that people cannot find a childcare facility that is not extremely expensive. But on the other hand, I'm not sure, though, that city government alone should bear that burden. I think it has to be have state and federal involvement, too. What's kind of your thought about that?
No, I mean, I agree with the state and federal involvement. I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that the city is often caught is that we are often providing the resources for more than our fair share of the region, right? And I think back to your point about, I mean, teachers and childcare. I mean, that's where that nexus of we've got a national shortage, we're not paying enough. How do we get people here? You know, I mean, so maybe, you know, just brainstorming here with you. I mean, if we had that endowment fund or that $12 million, could that $12 million be like go towards salary increases across the city, you know, and that be like a sustainable thing?
I don't know. Probably not, to be honest with you. I think it's going to require a lot more than that. But you know, it could go partly
depends
toward
on
that.
The how good of a fund manager you have.
Yeah, that's also a good point. Now, Kelsey Adams wrote, besides wanting money for St. Louis Public Schools, again, we got that a lot, maybe ask MoDOT what they can do over there about our roads and the crumbling potholes, sinkholes everywhere. I think you're on the transportation committee. Is that correct? Okay. But I also know that there's probably like ARPA money and federal infrastructure money that could go for roads too. So is that a good use of the RAMS money when there are other buckets of money to use for the city's road infrastructure?
Well, I think that's why we should wait to spend it. You know, and we could have the same discussion in, you know, the 2 to 3 years after we've spent, you know, our ARPA money to see do we need more money for roads? I mean, we probably will need more money for roads, but I think we'll have a better sense of that. I mean, there is the Board Bill 120, which we've allocated more than $40 million to streets alone. That's probably not going to cover everything. But yes, I mean, I think the quality of our streets, probably the tire industry is doing really well in St. Louis with all the potholes. And
oh, my gosh. Yes, I have changed my tires many times. PhD in CRAN that's their name. They didn't put their real name on Instagram.
It's their Instagram handle, not their name.
Yes. Build better public transit. It should not take an hour or more to get from any city neighborhood to downtown. Now, this is where I would push back against using the RAMS settlement for this. We passed, because I lived in the city, a sales tax in 2017 specifically for Metrolink expansion, and we have not spent a penny on that. And it's been accumulating for what, 5, 6, 7, 8 years now?
Six. I think that was 2017.
So I think there has been talks about using that money and getting federal money to expand Metrolink. So I'd be interested in your thoughts on that. I think that's separate from the RAMS discussion, but I do think it's something that the board may take up in the next year or two. So I'd be interested in your opinion on that.
I think before that we get to like the Metrolink question, though, she just said better public transit. That doesn't have to be Metrolink expansion. That can be buses, that can be restoring, you know, bus routes, increasing bus routes, etc. But I think in general, would it be better to use the dedicated sales tax money for public transit or to use RAMS money for public transit?
I mean, one, I think we have to see what we have. Two, I think it is a long-term commitment, right? From what I've read and understand, I mean, a lot of other states that have a more robust public transportation system, their state is also paying a more robust, they're more robustly contributing to those funds. So, I mean, it's, again, one of those things that the city can't do everything alone. And certainly when it comes to transportation, I mean, it's in the city, but we're a region. So I think looking at the state's contribution and also, you know, what we have and then making the commitment to build it, right? Because I've heard a lot of conversations about what's being built. Should it go this way? Why don't we have this? But really making that commitment to actually follow through is important.
I'm going to ask a really controversial question. If you can't get North-South Metrolink for some reason, is it time to dedicate that money that was meant for Metrolink expansion to something else? Because, again, that's been accumulating for a number of years. And I would argue that if you're not going to expand Metrolink with it, use the $60 or $70 million for something else.
Agree.
Yeah.
And that's as controversial as either.
Yeah. But that's I mean, $60 to $70 million is not going to build the system. It's meant to be the local contribution to it. It's not intended to be like, oh, we're going to take 35 years to raise the money from the sales tax alone, and we are going to be solely responsible for the alignment.
But I think these are broader questions on, I mean, something that I've been thinking a lot about is the reality of, like, what St. Louis is and what it could be, right? So, like, we've been declining in population. Not a surprise. A reality that, you know, we need to think about. We have a city that's built for 800,000 and we're less than 300,000. We want to recruit and attract more people. What are those things? Like, what does that look like? You know, we've had conversations about zoning lately. I can tell you just from my brief time as a public servant, our zoning maps are not accurate to what the way things actually are. Right. So I think, you know, these questions about transportation and some of these bigger questions about, I mean, in some ways they're existential questions. And then we have to apply, you know, the reality of, like, what is. Right. So if we're, and I think that that relates to, like, transportation, because who are we? What do we want to be? What are we building for? You know, and I think that's kind of at the heart of a lot of, like, or at least the feels of a lot of these big questions.
My final comment that I want you to respond to before I let you go. Photo Flynn on Instagram suggests taller and thicker arch. Should we spend the Rams money on a second arch?
Yes.
Okay.
No.
No. McDonald's, you know what? If we want to have the arch completed, McDonald's needs to chip in. Obviously. They're
right.
The golden
and we'll paint
arches.
Yellow too.
Yes. I've always thought that would be an amazing, like, public radio, St. Louis Public Radio April Fool's Day story, is that McDonald's is contributing to finish the arch.
On that note, Alderwoman, thank you so much for coming here and talking with us. We will have you back in subsequent years to talk to you about other things that are going down the pike, so to speak. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. Alderwoman, how can people find you on social media outlets, or how can they get in contact with your office if they need to get a hold of you?
Sure. So you can find us on Facebook, where it's Alderwoman Velasquez, and on Instagram, Alderwoman Velasquez. Again, I know it's a lot of letters. And then we actually, you can email us at 6th Ward, the number 6, T-H, Ward at stlewis-mo.gov.
Thank you very much, and until next time, so long.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.